Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
We're like in the 60s and 50s that were like, you know, like good girls in jail, reform school girls and stuff like that. Like, so when I was little, I was obsessed with that. I'm like, yeah, I want to be a bad girl.
Oh, yeah, but, so fun. Al is going to love what I'm about to say. My mother loves those movies. That's her favorite thing. She liked, yeah, women in prison. Like, and I guess they were more popular a while ago because she always laments. She's like, they don't do it anymore. It's like, it doesn't, you know, there's no new ones.
I know, they should bring it back. I always feel like people ask me, like, what's your favorite genre of, like, things to read or watch? And I always say, like, a bunch of friends do something terrible and accidentally kill a homeless person, like, in high school. And then, like, 30 years later, they're all slowly being murdered by somebody. Like, specific genre. Or, like, people are at private school and accidentally they poison a classmate. And same thing happens. Catches up to them.
The guilt.
When they have, like, yeah, the guilt, and, like, all the women are day drinkers. And they, you know, they'd be cutters, but they're too lazy.
Yeah, I feel like everything Jennifer's saying is, like, comedy gold.
Yeah, you are listening to The House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, of course, and I run things, believe it or not. Not Eric. Eric Shapiro, he's the Jewish laser beam guy.
Right. Yeah, I told you if I was talking too much to tell me. You told me I should predominate, and then I often do, and I feel terrible after.
No, but so you've got the laser beams. I can't.
He's the power of the laser.
Yeah, no, it's not about the laser beams. I'm happy. I only do this because I really think you're funny, so I get on and I laugh for an hour. So
He's got the laser beams, but he can't help but get banned on Facebook. Oh, it's just something.
Right, exactly. Oh, I was thinking
it's a conspiracy.
He doesn't know how to use his power, right? Call George Soros. He's there to help.
Yeah. I guess I'm still banned. I'm going to put a photo up. I'll put something up today to see if I still am. I was getting you literally can have a nervous breakdown when it starts happening, because I generally get pretty good engagement. But I was putting things up, and it was like crickets. I was like, oh, no, does everybody hate me? And I have been canceled a couple times, so I really start worrying. I start, like, searching my name on Twitter. I'm like, wait, what did I do? Like, and I realized it was because I was making fun of Karens, you know, women women that call the manager. And I thought that was the most innocuous thing, and an actual Karen – has taken this up as a cause. I won't say her last name because I'm not that mean. But she's taken this up as
her first name Karen? Is her real name?
Her first name
Karen?
Is actual Karen. Her parents named her Karen. And I feel terrible that happened. I mean, I always, whenever I make fun of Karens. I always do worry about real Karens. It's not like I'm some mean bastard, but, you know, on the other hand, we're not going to stop using this word. It's just become a cultural thing. You know,
so it is a cultural thing. It's not my fault. It very much is. And I have a friend whose name is Karen, and I feel bad because I've made fun of Karens to her. And, like, you can see, like, a little bit, like, she, like, winces a little. Like,
How could you blame them?
Like, I sprayed, like, salt water in her eyes.
That's my drag name. My drag name's Karen, and it doesn't bother me.
Right. Yeah, you started that after the nickname started.
Yeah, actually, I think it gives me more hits. Hashtag Karen.
Yeah. Well, yes, they shadow ban me, but it's okay. I mean, more, all I have to do is come on this show, the more people hear my voice. It makes no difference.
I'll be canceled then. No.
Yeah, I know. You'll by association.
I was going to say, we're going to catch it like it's a virus.
It's terrible.
You're going to drag us down.
I said I wouldn't predominate, so I'm not going to tell my war stories, but I've been called for no reason, mind you. I have to tell you, Trust me when I tell you, there was no reason. It was just that I was, like, slightly outside of the progressive fold on an opinion. Because I write opinion editorials, and I've been called racist, sexist, and fascist. And it's so disturbing when it happens. I told Al, like, what it does to your mental health. Like, people calling you a piece of crap, and I can't sleep. And it hasn't happened in a while, though, so...
Yeah, well, I'll get on
because you're meditating now.
That's true. It's quantum physics. I'm sort of like, I'm protecting myself.
He meditates in his robe.
Right.
And now the other voice is Karen. No, it's
right.
Jennifer and Gordon, right? So what?
Hey.
My God.
Hi.
So now that you're an A-list celebrity star.
Oh, gosh. Yes, no. Yes.
I mean, my God. And now you've got a new book coming out. It's not out yet, right?
It is called Pretty Ugly, and it comes out July 13th. And am I talking about it now? Am I doing my thing?
Well, a little bit. I'm interested. You call it Pretty Ugly, so I don't remember getting any royalty checks for using my name. what's this with the name? The title in itself is not correct, right?
No, it's not, but it does make sense. It's a story about two people, really. An Instagram influencer who does makeup tutorials based on vintage books. And she kind of lives this very fictitious life, and she is all about how she looks and how she presents herself because she suffered from a childhood trauma. So she's reinvented herself as an influencer, and her name is Omelia, and everybody loves her. And it also follows a politician who gets embroiled in a very minor level political scandal, but he is running for the governor of the state of Massachusetts. His father is the Republican vice president of the United States. So the story follows these two people while a virus breaks out. And this was pre-COVID when I came up with this, but my virus isn't our virus. It's kind of a mutation between herpes and meningitis, like a bacterial meningitis, so it makes your face like rot off.
Well,
oh wow! Oh,
put down your yogurt.
So it's like I keep telling people, I'm like, you know, show up for the body horror and stay for the possible rom-com that happens when the world ends. So that's why it's called Pretty Ugly, because people do end up having to wear masks in the book. The people who end up surviving the virus, but it's because they're hideously disfigured.
Wow. I love that you incorporated Instagram, because I feel like I always complain that authors aren't on time. Like social media doesn't exist in too many books. Like authors don't know how to integrate or handle it, but also cell phones in a lot of cases. But that's really cool that's a foundational element.
Yeah. This was the first time, even though like I've written books that take place in, you know, whatever like modern day is in like fiction world. But this is the first time I've kind of concentrated on social media and people checking their phones and, you know, doing stuff and getting, you know, quote unquote canceled because you're caught on a hot mic. Like it's all very like contemporary. There's a lot of doom scrolling and it was refreshing to be able to just like kind of talk about things that really happen to us, like mm-hmm. where, you know, we get trapped in staring at Facebook for hours, and like it's part of who we are, and it makes sense for it to be part of who my characters are too.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I think that's going to be a selling point for a lot of people, because the absence of it is almost creepy in a lot of books. It's like, wait, why aren't these people on their phones all day? You know, like it's just become a reality. Yeah.
I'm working on a project right now that I can't really talk about, but it's very, 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 very social media focused in a dark way. So it's been interesting to write in like chat room logs and text messages and, you know, people just being very obsessed with their phones.
But just this sort of theme, when you write in this style and you add these subjects, like, you know, for instance, the Republican vice president and stuff. No, but, you know, it has to be addressed because in the sense that, you know, there's so much, I don't know what you want to call it, controversy. There's so much talk about politics as of late and vice president and Republican. Does this sort of, do you worry about being canceled for that? backlash, you know?
You know, not really. I feel like haters are going to hate no matter what. And I don't want to say I didn't try to villainize my Republican vice president character in this book, because he definitely is pseudo villainous at times. He's not likable, but I think I chalk it up more to like the father-son dynamic, and I don't talk about the politics as much, though I think if anybody who like knows me on social media or even in real life, they know that I'm incredibly liberal and outspoken.
I thought you were far right wing.
I'm a QAnon.
Well, that's, you know, but that whole thing, like when you're trying to, you know, you've got a virus, you've got a little the Republican in there, you got all this stuff, you know, Instagram. So it's very to date. I just wonder if it, how do you think people read into that?
You know, I don't know. I don't know how they will. You know, I've had my beta readers liked it. I've gotten some really great book blurbs from people like Wendy Webb and Sean Cosby. And, you know, none of them had said, none of them mentioned the politicalness of it. But they all mentioned that, like, sometimes it felt too real because they read it, you know, while we're still in this pandemic that we're in. So I think more people will probably be upset that it's about a virus than they would be upset about the politicalness of it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I feel like people are going to be like, oh, I don't want to read a book about a virus. And I'm going to be like, but it's not our virus. It's a different virus. And trust me, it's different. And I'm sorry I wrote a book about a pandemic and it's coming out, you know, at the tail end of a pandemic. But my brain had to do it. It was in my head before COVID and I had to get it out. And
oh wow! Like, so you were prescient. It was prophetic in a way. Like, and I'm not saying that fancifully, because I do believe, like, not to get airy fairy, but sometimes you get like tapped on the shoulder with an idea, and it's like, all right, this is what I'm uploading from the universe.
Yeah. So the crazy thing happened. I believe in that stuff too. My first book that came out was called Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, and.
Okay.
One of my characters has a very specific injury. He gets in a car wreck and his hip shatters and his femur shatters. So he has like a steel rod in his leg and he walks with a limp. And so as I was writing that book, I was maybe like in my second draft of it. My mom, who lives with us, fell down, shattered her hip and broke her femur. And she had to have the same surgery that my character did in the book. And I was like, what did I manifest? And my husband always jokes, he's like, be careful with what you're writing.
I mean, I don't want to, like, I promise not to predominate. We can get, like, super bug out, airy-fairy with all this. But, yeah, I do think there's a holographic component to reality. So when you're writing, I think it's sort of a like self-hypnosis, and you could you could start grafting what you're writing onto the grid, kind of.
Yeah. So that's, I believe in that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's wild. Yeah. It's like, it's, oh no.
Yeah.
So,
oh my gosh.
So if you write about your husband, the husband in this story, and the wife taking out a huge insurance policy on his life.
Right.
Oh. It's going to happen. You got it. Yeah.
Oh.
I'm
telling you. Yeah. I love my husband too much.
Poor Mr. Gordon.
Yeah. Poor Mr.
Gordon. Oh, yeah. He's not a Mr. Gordon. I didn't take his last name.
Oh, I apologize.
No, it's okay.
Your last name. Yeah.
No, because his first name is Roman. And then, like, none of the names work together. Like, Roman Gordon.
Roman Gordon. Oh, it sort of flashes a little. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
wait, what is his last name?
Or you his last name is, I can say it's Sirotin. It's Russian. So,
oh, okay.
Then I would be Jennifer Sirotin, and I feel like that's too many hard R's.
Just don't sound right. You're right. It's
like Jennifer Sirotin. I sound like Winona Ryder. Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I feel bad for you because I'm Russian too. We're intense husbands to have. It's. I'll put you in touch with my wife. You can trade notes.
I've gotten used to it. We've been together we've only been married since Halloween, but we have been together for 11 years, 10 years.
Oh wow. Oh, congratulations on the recent marriage. So you got married mid-pandemic.
Yes, we eloped. We knew we wanted to get married on Halloween because it was a full moon. It was a Saturday. It was the perfect date. But then the pandemic came and happened to us all. And we were just like, well, we can't have a wedding and that's fine. But then we went back and forth for a while, but we ended up just deciding to do it. We stayed in a bed and breakfast that was haunted. We were the only guests there. So it was really a nice 2-day getaway mid-pandemic.
Oh, wow. Unforgettable, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I feel, you know, I'm a fun, enjoyable husband, but as a Russian, I just have trouble relaxing or enjoying myself. That's my only limitation. Yeah. Everything is always very severe and dark. Yeah.
I understand that. I understand that. I'm like, just relax. Just relax.
Yeah.
It's impossible. Calm yourself.
It's always a sub-zero winter of the soul. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, were you born in Russia? Were your parents born in Russia?
It's all my grandparents. I'm Russian, okay. Polish, and German, but most of my ancestors are Russian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always wanted to be Russian because, like, growing up, like, during the Cold War, I was, like, kind of obsessed with Russia. Had the Russian Patch Kid doll. Like, loved watching all the Russian figure skaters. I was like, gosh, being Russian would be so cool. And, so again, I think I manifested. So I married
Russian.
Oh,
that is a manifestation. Oh, you're not kidding. Like, so my wife, because I'm Jewish, my wife is Black and Filipino, and we now live in the town where she grew up, and we have the local newspaper here, and we're part of this community, which is predominantly Asian. It's 70% Asian. And her growing up here, she was obsessed with Jewish people, and she never met one. Like, I'm, like, literally one of the only ones here now. Like, she loved Schindler's List. Like, she was very interested in the Holocaust. And then I feel she manifested me. So I totally believe in that stuff. Okay, are you a New Yorker? Or you sound like an East Coaster. Where are you?
I am an East Coaster. I'm in New Hampshire.
You're
in
New Hampshire.
So, but like 45 minutes from Boston. But I, most people, when they meet me either online or in real life, assume I'm Jewish and from New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny because I'm from New Jersey myself. Yeah.
Okay.
You are.
And people go, but like in a nice way. You seem like you're from Jersey, but in a good way. And I'm like, what does that even mean?
I'll tell you, having grown up in Jersey, we were so made fun of growing up. Like, it was always a punchline. Like, what exit? Or like, you know, we're all trash and all this stuff. I have to tell you, or it could just be a perceptual thing. When the Sopranos took over the world, like, I felt like it upped our credibility so much. Like, suddenly we became, like, anthropologically fascinating. Like, and that show so accurately captures us. But it's so interesting because I never thought of it consciously. It was always subterranean. But because we've been Facebook friends for about a year, I was absolutely operating under the assumption that you were a Jewish New Yorker. And, I'm almost slightly surprised that you're not. Yeah.
I mean, everybody thinks I am. For a little while, I worked at an art gallery in New Hampshire, everybody that I worked with was Jewish, except for me. And I remember And like one time the rabbi came in and he was just like, I haven't seen you in temple in a long time. And I'm like, oh, I've never been to temple. And yeah. He was just like, I know who, like, he thought I was the owner of the gallery's daughter who was also okay. named Jennifer. But I'm like, no, I'm not Jewish. And I had to like convince the rabbi that I wasn't Jewish. And then he was like,
you should still
come to temple. And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay.
You're like more Jewish than Jewish people.
Yeah. I'm definitely more Jewish than my Jewish husband.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I believe it. Yeah.
We should all be like just like proud of who we are and like where we came from. Like I grew up like really, really, really self-conscious of everything I was because I grew up poor in a rich town. Okay. Like I was right on the outskirts of the town in like this little tiny house, and you know, I wore the same clothes a lot, and I was in a private Catholic school, but then I switched to a public school. And the kids there were freaking monsters. You know, they saw me as like weird and poor. Mm. And I was just like constantly made fun of for everything I was. So like, you know, you go through life and it's hard to let that stuff go. Like,
yeah, it is. It really is. Yeah. I think, it is fascinating. It imprints itself on you.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like you get to be an adult and you're just like, well, I wasted so much energy. Like, being paranoid and scared to just be me. And
yeah, you're so right. And it's such a gift when you finally relax about it. I mean, I think with me, it was so subterranean because I always was thought to be Italian, and I loved, you know, The Godfather and Goodfellas. So like, I was like, oh, it's cool to be Italian. So I'm just going to go with it. And that it took me years and years to unpeel that onion and be like, whoa, in the course of doing that and embracing that, I was denying something else that's profoundly important and profoundly a profoundly positive part of my identity.
I'm very interested, like when you guys are talking about the Jewish and all this stuff, I'm so interested in hearing what the culture's like, what you do in your life, what a Jewish person is or does.
Yeah.
But it's not about because I dislike them, they're enemies. It's because...
Oh, yeah, otherness. Or, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, well, what is a Jew? Like, what does that mean? You know, and so for me, that's very interesting. So I don't understand why people hate because of the differences, because I think that we need each other in order to progress further. You know, there's so many things that we can each do that contribute to a better place to live. So it just is bizarre to me.
Well, I just wish more people like thought like that instead of like being fearful of things that are other than them. Like, you know, and I think this is also why, Alan, you're like such a great interviewer, because you have a natural curiosity of like, just I am very curious that what is your life like, and there's a genuineness there,
right?
That you like, some people like ask you questions and you can tell that they're not even listening and they don't care, but you know, those people
well, you've got to ask more about the person as well, because you are everything you do. So when you are putting out a book or you're putting out a movie or whatever's happening in your life, it's better to go deep into that person to find out who they are as a person and what makes them tick, because that's going to explain the book even better than them telling me the characters, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're right. I also, when I buy a book, and this is also, even just talking to Jennifer now makes me, I've always wanted to read your work, Jennifer, but now it's more acute than ever. You are buying the author when you're buying a book.
You are.
I think, yeah, you're buying the attitude, the personality. Yeah.
And I feel like, I think like it's like that with all of the arts, really. Like, even if it's a painting or you know, a music, like, I want to buy the part of that artist's soul. I want to, like, so I always say, like, if I like the artist, I'll probably like the art. But if I meet the artist and the artist is a total, you know, jackass, I'm not going to buy the book. Or even if I did like the book before, it's going to be tainted a little bit. Like,
but do you think that's a problem? You know, because that's going on a lot right now, you know, where people all of a sudden, Woody Allen did this. And so what they used to call the best movie maker in the world is all of a sudden trash. And it's like, does it really change it changes who you think of that person, like, maybe.
But you can separate the art from the artist. So the other night, for the first time in years, my husband and I watched a Kevin Spacey movie.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I was like, am I going to be able to look at him and still appreciate his performance? And I could.
Yeah.
I could. Like, I was just like, well, you know, so, but I think I wouldn't actively support somebody that I didn't respect.
Right. It's not like he'd be a cheerleader. That's a tricky one. Like, and Kevin Spacey is such a good example because I think he's one of the most talented people that was canceled. Like, he's a legitimately powerful artist. And it's interesting because I felt with that, I don't think I've sat through something, but I've caught things like, and I remember I caught his whole section of Seven. I'm like, this is better now because of what he did, which is a taboo thing to say. But, and then American Beauty, on the other hand, where he plays a person of more character, I felt like I caught a big strand of that too and watched it for like an hour, and he's magnificent, but I found it slightly distracting.
Yeah. So we watched Glengarry Glen Ross. And he plays a jerk in that, so it was like really easy to just be like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I mean, what's funny is Seven was the movie that, like, you know, we were talking about. I was just like, we can't give up Kevin Spacey completely because I don't want to never watch Seven again.
Right. Oh yeah, exactly. It's like, and that's
it's
why,
like, I'm going to have to at some point in time watch The Usual Suspects again because I want to.
Oh, exactly. You said, I couldn't agree more. It's interesting because there are certain people that say, oh, cancel culture doesn't exist. But I think not only do I disagree with that, but in addition, the word cancel is being used ironically to an extent because you can't just delete somebody. It's not possible.
Yeah, so like J.K. Rowling is still going to be J.K. Rowling. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't
totally
matter.
Absolutely. Like, I think in her case, also, she's picking up a lot of new fans, like, that are more apolitical or moderate or right-leaning. Like, so I think she her appeal, if at all possible, is broadened in a way that the people that have that have an issue with her don't realize.
Yeah. No, I agree because, and you know, and a lot of people are just like, well, even though I don't like her, I'm not going to stop loving Harry Potter. But now,
what can you do? Yeah.
Yeah, you can't stop. But now, like you said, she has people who probably never read Harry Potter, but might agree with her politically and be like, you know, I should check those books out. So
it's... Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I just wonder how much this means, but like in 200 years, does it mean anything? Because none of us are alive. Nobody was alive when Kevin Spacey was out. So in 200 years.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
When someone watches it, they won't have that preoccupation.
Right, and if they, you're right, it definitely won't be a preoccupation. If anything, in the history books, it would be an asterisk, a footnote, and it's like, it becomes fascinating. It's like, I can't even remember, there was a comedian, what was it, Fatty Arbuckle? Like, is that who that was? From, like the old movie era, like he killed somebody?
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah, and it's like, that to me, because it's so long ago, and that's a whole other... point also that Al's making in terms of as time goes by, like it's robbed of its emotion. So it's like it becomes a point of fascination. It's like, oh, that artist did something grisly, and that makes it, maybe that'll draw you to checking out the art, or maybe you'll stay away. But it's not like this alarmist thing that we have in the present tense.
Exactly. Like, you know, Nobody cares when they watch an old Joan Crawford movie that she was like a terrible monster. Like, I'll watch Whatever Happened to Baby Jane forever. Like, please, it doesn't matter if you...
Well, I think in time it's not going to matter. I think it fades away and the art is left, and then the new generations won't be in touch with it, and it won't matter as much, if that makes sense, I think.
It does make sense.
What was the point of writing it? Like, did you have a theme when you were writing this?
You know, my theme originally started as what would happen to people who are base their entire life on being a fictitious version of themselves, and then they can't be that version of themselves anymore because they become disfigured. Mm. But then throughout the writing of it, it really became kind of a journey of figuring out who you really are. So both my main characters, each, you know, they don't know each other, but each of them have like a very severe loss in their childhood. And it's that moment that kind of shapes them into, I'll just be a different person. I'll be a fictitious version of myself, and then nobody can hurt me. So it, you know, thematically, it was about the world ending, but not just the world in general ending, but like their world, their fictitious world has ended. And the only thing they have left is actually who they really are. And it's about reconciling who you really are. Are you pretty? Are you ugly? Are you both? Do you, you know, are you destined to be alone because you can't love yourself? And so, and it's, you know, it's a story about connecting with family, and understanding who and what family actually is, especially when you don't have a family. Like, so... Yeah, it's parts of it are very, very beautiful. It's just like, it's very much like a lament on life, an unlived life, and how to maybe find happiness when there's honestly like no happiness to be found. So it's about that.
It's very timely. I think so many of us can relate to the themes in terms of the social media avatar versus the actual person and navigating reality. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope.
Well, and I wonder if it's not something that we all have anyway, you know, like, you know, when we dress and do our hair and do our things to present ourselves in public, isn't that sort of an image that's not really ourself?
Oh, it definitely is. I mean, and this comes back to, you know, what I was saying earlier, like I was picked on in school. I had really, 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 really terrible skin growing up, and my skin's still not awesome, but I wear makeup every single day, even if I don't leave the house. Like I, because that's part of who I am, like the kind of the, I guess like the fictitious version of me. I wear makeup. I won't even go to the mailbox without makeup. Like there was a time a few years ago, I was really sick and had to go to the emergency room, and I was putting on my makeup before I left. And my husband was like, "You're probably dying right now. Let's just get you into the car and bring you to the hospital." And I was like, "No, I just have to put on my makeup because, because I have to, like, I need to be wearing lipstick, even though, you know, I was, you know, very close to death."
Wow.
Eric's sort of like that.
Yeah.
Eric needs his lipstick.
He needs his lipstick.
Very close to death.
Yeah, I'm in big trouble, guys.
Yeah.
yeah.
That's really interesting, that factor of the image that we portray and then what's underneath it and being scared to let it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you decide what to do with your character in something like that? Like what exactly were you going to pick out as a hidden thing other than the disfigurement, of course?
I'm such a pantser that I really just, it just kind of happens as I'm writing. Like I just discover things as I'm writing the characters. I'm getting to know them. Like this is my first draft is me just telling the story to myself and the characters telling the story to me. So that sometimes I'm writing in, you know, a little, like I'm in their head with them and it's like I can see their memories, their childhood memories. Like it's not a spoiler because it's just such a minor part in the book. My main female character, she goes by the name of Omelia. Her real name's Nicole. But she, as I was writing it, I just like have this like memory of her eating raw meat when she was a little kid and getting really sick and her father putting a cool cloth on the back of her neck and like rubbing her back. And to her, that was like the only time she ever really felt loved. Her father then, like, he ends up killing himself later on in her life. But, like, that's that defining moment of what love is to her. And that's just something that, like, popped into my head. Of, like, this is what this broken girl, woman, thinks of as, like, that's what she wants most in the world. Is somebody to, like, put a cool cloth on the back of her neck and rub her back. Mm-hmm.
Is it in the first person or third person?
Third person.
Okay.
But when you take a character, where does someone like that come from for you? Like that character, is that something out of yourself, your own life, or is that something that just comes to you?
I think it's both. I feel like there's aspects of all of my characters, even the terrible ones that are me. Like bad parts of me are woven into my character someplace. The good parts of me are too. Yeah. A lot of the writing for Pretty Ugly actually came about. I've been taking these weekly grief writing classes, like exploring grief through multiple different ways of writing. And because I write a lot about grief in my horror. And a lot of this book actually came about because I would attend these grief writing sessions and I would just like put myself in my character's headspace and explore my own true life grief in like through my character's voice, if that made sense. So like I would just like do these free writes and a lot of my discoveries of who these characters were, even the male character, Sam, kind of came about through grief writing prompts and things. And a lot of it didn't make it into the book, but some of it did. And some very personal things that have to do with my life wove themselves into the book. But every book I've written, I think there's personal parts of me in there.
Does that worry you when you expose yourself like that?
No, it doesn't. 'Cause I feel like I'm an emotional person. And I think being a performer for so long, I went to school for theater and then I was a professional dancer until COVID. I think I've been strongest artistically in any way, shape or form when I'm like exposed emotionally, like I'll write from the wound. I don't need to write from the scar. I don't need to wait for it to heal. Like I will write from the wound every day. I would, you know, when I would dance or perform, like just right from that vein. Like I don't have it in me. I don't have the energy to wait until I heal before I start creating something. And it's, you know, sometimes it's hurtful when somebody reads your book and they pick out something that was very personal to you. And they're like, I just hated this. Or that part wasn't believable. And I'm like, oh, that part was actually like my life. So trust me when I say that part was real.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I could imagine that. I just, so did you include the social media aspect because of your feeling toward it, maybe?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I think, especially in the past year and a half since COVID, and even before that, I think so much of who we are right now is social media dependent, especially as artists, as authors, as anything. Like, so much of our life is building a brand and being something that people can connect with. And I guess I'm very lucky. My brand, quote unquote, is just my personality. Like, it's just, I try very hard to just be completely honest and, you know, weird sometimes, not weird other times, resting bitch face all the time.
Well, yeah.
Not worried about it.
That's a good title, resting bitch face all the time.
I just wrote something yesterday where I was talking about how tango is my favorite dance because I'm naturally frowny faced and I refer to myself as having resting tango face.
Oh, that's awesome. That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's even nicer, right?
It is nicer.
Well, you know, so did you see yourself being a writer like years before? Like, because this is fairly new, recent.
Yeah. I mean, I always wrote ever since I was little. Most of it was like a lot of poetry. I wrote a lot of poetry for many years and some short stories that were, you know, admittedly god awful and terrible. Like, cause I thought I was being edgy when I was just like, oh, I'm going to write this story. But from like the point of view of the, like the sexual predator, like nobody wants to read that, you know, especially like I was like 18 thinking like I was cool. And I wrote a independent comic book for a little while. So I always wrote, but then somewhere along the way, I lost my confidence and stopped writing. And I kept telling myself, you know, oh, that's just not something you'll ever do. It's not something you'll ever do. You can't write a book. Like, who are you kidding? And one day I just got very tired of telling myself I couldn't do it. And I sat down and thought, yeah, maybe I'll try to write this one idea that I've been playing with for, you know, 20 years in my head. And that was my first book. That was Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent.
This is your Pretty Ugly is your second book.
No, Pretty Ugly is my fourth.
Oh, sorry. Okay. It's a recent part of your life, but you've been very prolific.
Yeah. Well, yes. Okay. Yeah. Wow. And I think people are like, oh gosh, you're so prolific. But my second and third books, that's actually like one book. Like, okay. Yeah, I consider it one book. It's like a two-part thing. But, you know, when you're like indie published, like sometimes it's about like pumping out books fast, which
yeah,
I'm like, but I really can't do that. It's not sustainable. I just, by the time my first book came out, I already had a lot of stuff finished.
Got it. What are the titles of the second and third one?
The second book is called From Daylight to Madness. Okay. And the third book is called When the Sleeping Dead Still Talk. And those are both like Victorian era gothic horror, like mental institution type of.
Oh, wow.
And just like upbeat laugh.
I love your I love your titles. They're all really poetic.
So those three, Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, From Daylight to Madness, When the Sleeping Dead Still Talk, those were all actual lines from poems that I wrote.
Oh, very nice. Okay.
That ended up like thematically working their way into the novels.
Oh, that's beautiful. Okay. And Pretty Ugly is a great title also.
Yes. It's, you know, it's the right title for this book.
Oh, excellent.
When you go back and look at the earlier books, do you think you could have ever written them now again? I mean that, like, how would they be different if you were to write them now?
You know, I don't, they would just like, they'd be cleaner, I would say. I think, you know, like as authors, you just like, you polish your craft as you go. So I think some of the, just like structurally, they would be cleaner, but I wouldn't change any of them emotionally at all. I think, they told the story that I always wanted to tell. Like in Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, which was my first book, the one that it won the Kindle Award for Best Horror of 2020. it, you know, that was like my dream book. It really, it took me, it lived in my head for 20 years. I tried to write it as a 3-person play. I tried to write it as a graphic novel. Nothing worked. But it works as a novel. And I wouldn't change. I don't like to think about like changing things. It exists in the universe and it's a snapshot of who I was when I was writing them. So I wouldn't write them differently. I would write them more like cleaned up a little, like grammatically. Like right now I'm obsessed with using M dashes. So I would probably like go back and change all of the like commas to M dashes. And that's, that wouldn't help.
So do you find that a real important aspect for you? Like the, you know, the technique, the grammar, all the technical parts of writing, or is it still about the story?
It's still about the story. I mean, I know I should care more about the grammar parts and all the technical parts, but to me, it is, it's the story, it's the characters. It's, I do love language. I love like molding language, like it's clay, you know, I just making it take different shapes. I'm still, you know, I'm a poet at heart. So there's a lot of you know, lyrical language, and there's a rhythm to the way I write with word repetitions and sentence length. And so.
And what's the underlying theme? Like if someone takes home your book and reads it, besides the story itself, do you have something you want them to take away or think about besides the story?
I think honestly the work, I think my overreaching theme would actually be grief and grief writing and how grief affects our lives. And it's not even just necessarily like current grief, like it's just like how it shapes us. And because like grief is like a tidal wave. It can come and bowl you over, but it's also like a street with a lot of potholes in it. Sometimes it's like a, you know, a story told by a schizophrenic. It doesn't make any sense. It's just, so yeah, I would say that everything I write is kind of an exploration of grief in some way, shape or form. And grief is doesn't necessarily mean like death, because you can grieve anything. You can grieve, you know, losing a job, or you can grieve the fact that you're heavier now than you were 5 years ago. You can grieve your body changing. You can grieve a life that you didn't live. So,
Yeah, I'm babbling. Eric has to grieve when they cancel the color of lipstick that is his favorite. You know.
It's not over yet. That's a day-to-day problem.
That's the grief you live with always.
Yeah.
And honestly, I've been wearing the same color lipstick since I was in high school, so and I'm always paranoid that they're going to discontinue it.
Oh, wow, yeah. And Al knows what he speaks.
Yeah.
Just like, and I would die.
The worst thing, like, in the world for a woman is to go to get her lipstick and they've discontinued it.
Oh, wow.
Or for me, as being a curly-haired woman, like finding the right products to like deal with my hair is a lifelong battle, and when they discontinue one of my hair products, that it's like an 8-month process to like figure out a new combination of conditioners and things that somehow fix the curly hair.
Oh wow.
No, it happens to me all the time.
Yeah. Al has a nice full head of curly hair. Yeah, everybody thinks he's Jewish.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So it sounds pretty deep. How does, like, when you go into a book like this and you did Pretty Ugly, at the end of it, like, you know, so you've put it out, and how has this changed you, do you think, or is it too soon to tell?
I think it might be too soon to tell. I feel like I miss my characters so much when I stop writing them. And I always have to take like a mental break because I don't know who I am without them for a little while. So I can't like go right into another project. But I think Pretty Ugly changed me because I feel like it brought out a less cynical side of me. And there's like a strange romanticism in Pretty Ugly that I wasn't accessing that part of my emotions in my brain. And I guess like believing in self-forgiveness, like it was all of that.
Humans are pretty complicated, aren't we?
Yeah. We're screwed up.
Well, yeah, because, you know, my dogs just kind of go about each day as it's a new day and put the past in the past, you know? It's kind of... I love my dogs because they take me back to now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they're just present. They're just...
Yeah, yeah. It's about now. It's not about what happened yesterday or what it's going to happen tomorrow. It's about, well, let's play with that ball now. You know?
Yeah, but they also have no goddamn responsibilities. Come on.
Well,
I would be pretty happy if
you provide the food. Come on.
You provide the food. You pet them. Yeah. Toys.
Yeah.
Let's not aggrandize them, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, but you know, it's still, I find it's just interesting how deep it goes. So where do you go from here?
So I am working on a project now that I cannot talk about.
Oh, she'd tell you, but she'd have to kill you.
Yeah. I mean, so I will say it's not a horror novel. So I guess I could say that. It's like my first time not writing horror. It's still dark, but it's not horror related. So I'm about 60,000 words into a total vomit first draft. And
What's the time frame on something like that? Do you have one, or is it? Can you sit yourself down and force yourself to write kind of in time? Or
I can, but I don't like to. Because I'll always rebel against that. If I'm like, I have to do 1,000 words a day, you know, I can't do that. That's not how I work. I will say the time frame for the book I'm writing right now that I can't talk about. My agent, not Mickey, my publicist, but my agent did say, write it and write it fast because she thought the idea was like a hot idea.
Oh, nice.
So this is probably like one of the fastest times I've written, but I also think my drafting process is going to take a lot longer because I didn't go into this project with like a huge mental well of understanding who these characters were. So I'm figuring them out as I, on the fly, like as I'm typing, figuring out, you know, a whole different genre to be writing in. And
how does that feel? Does it change your mind?
You know? It's liberating. But also it's hard for me not to go back to like kind of horror tropes and things like that because I love them so much. And I keep thinking like, I should just add like a ghost in here. And I'm like, no, don't add a ghost. That wouldn't even make sense. But so it's, you know, when the writing's going well, and I think this is the same for like any project, when the writing's going well, it feels great. And then there's days where you just don't have words. Like, they're just not there.
Yeah, yeah. Story of my life. Wow. Well, this is pretty amazing. So now let's talk about where people find Jennifer Ann Gordon.
Oh, the easiest place to find Jennifer Ann Gordon is actually at jenniferanngordon.com, my website. That has links to all of my social media. So you can choose where to benevolently stalk me. I'm not on Twitter a lot because it gives me like rage induced panic attacks.
Yeah.
I do have a Twitter account, but don't expect anything from it really, except the occasional retweet of a meme. But I am active on Instagram. If you like dogs, follow me on Instagram because I take a lot of pictures of my dog. But again, mostly active on Facebook.
Well, great. Now, we're going to have you linked up to our webpage as well. People listening can find you real easy then. And
if they want to, after all this talk, they'll really like that. That girl is cray, cray.
Well, you know how it is. So does your pandemic in your book, does it end? Or your virus?
No.
No. Do they have QAnon? Is there like Q there, or is it R? Or
no.
S? Maybe a V.
No.
No V group. Oh, well, there you go. Well, our guest has been the great Jennifer Ann Gordon, and the new book is Pretty Ugly. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Eric. It was great.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.